Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Happy New Year, everyone. You're going to find this a little bit different program than what we usually do, in that this is the beginning of the new year, January 1st, that we're doing this program live. I felt it was very important that we start the year off the right way in terms of health. I'm a great believer in consumer health, and during the year, if you've been listening to this program on a regular basis, you know that two or three times a year I will do a program on health that may have absolutely nothing to do with the law. But it's my philosophy that I think health issues are as important for you and me, and maybe more important than most legal issues. So what we're doing tonight is we're talking about eating well for health and longevity. My guest is Rebecca Katz. She has a master's in nutrition. She is the executive chef of the annual Food as Medicine training program at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine at Georgetown Medical School. She is the author of several books. The one that I invited her to talk about on this segment of Your Legal Rights is The Longevity Kitchen. Her previous book is The Cancer Fighting Kitchen. They're published by 10 Speed Books. And so we're going to have a chance to hear something that I think might make a difference in your life. I think it'll make a difference in my life. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you. It's lovely to have you here. Would you tell us, what is it, generally speaking, that you feel that food can do for us in longevity? And we're not talking about living to age 100 or more, but having a more, let's say, vibrant, healthful life. What has motivated you?
Well, I think it's interesting to look at how food affects our bodies, and that today, in 2014, we are just starting to catch up to the wisdom of our elders. And our elders knew, especially in other countries around the world, that eating well could help them live not just long lives, but really healthy lives. In other words, feeling really good. And today, we know that our genes are not our destiny, so that what we eat can actually affect how our genes behave in our body. So let's say we might be predisposed to something like diabetes or cancer or heart disease or another chronic illness. We know that just by maybe adjusting some of the foods that we eat, we can shift the way those genes express. In other words, we have more control than we think that we have.
One of the things that has bothered me over the years, I mean, I've been practicing law for about 48 years, and the last 29 or so as a consumer deputy DA for San Mateo County. Pardon me. One of the things that has bothered me about the medical profession, generally speaking, is that nutrition is not a course required in medical school. So these doctors, generally speaking, historically, know very little about nutrition. And I think it's important, if you would, so that people understand where you're coming from and your background and your expertise, if you would talk a little bit before we get into some of the foods that I know you want to talk about. If you talk a little bit about your connection with Georgetown Medical School, and also I know you're currently involved in doing a project at Stanford Hospital. So could you talk about both of those just very briefly, please?
Yes. I've been working in this field for 14 years, and when I began, nobody really wanted to hear about food as it related to medicine or health or that it could affect outcomes on illness. It just, people would just kind of walk away.
When you say people, is that mostly doctors?
Mostly healthcare practitioners.
Yeah, okay.
There wasn't very much interest, you know. Now what I'm seeing 14 years later, it's...
You know, there is, by the way, and some of the people I know are not going to be happy with me saying this, there is an ego trip here, you know, where the medical profession saying, I know it all.
Well, you know, it's... I have to say that I'm happy to say that things are starting to change.
I'm glad to hear that.
And that all of a sudden there is an eagerness in the healthcare.
So the ego trip has become an eagerness.
An eagerness. Very good, Chuck. Very good.
I'll put that on my resume.
Really? That's a beautiful way of saying it. Yeah, but it's if you stick with something long enough,
yeah,
you get to see. You know, you get pounced on long enough and then you keep picking yourself up and you get to see that things shift. And what we're seeing now is that indeed, the healthcare community is starting to see the value of foods. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about good, whole foods. You know, nothing, not like the eye of newt or, you know, a newfangled type of thing. Just good food that has not been processed and how that can affect the outcomes of so many of the chronic diseases that we're facing today.
So that people know what you are doing and how you are doing it in the medical community, very briefly talk about your connection with Georgetown Medical School as well as Stanford, if you would.
Yes.
And I will not interrupt.
Okay. Well, I am the executive chef of a program called the Food as Medicine Training Program, and that's through the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington. And basically, my role is to translate the science of food onto the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm working with healthcare practitioners, a lot of unbelievable doctors who are teaching other doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as the cook, as a trained chef, and with a Master's of Science in Nutrition, I am translating what is that food, you know, that we're talking about in terms of the nutritional science. What does that translate to? And why is it important? And how can doctors open their minds to that the way food can help us? And I have found, as in the role of a cook, is through their taste buds. And I would say that anybody would get excited about food, healthy food, if it was prepared in a way that was unbelievably yummy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So really, I have always gone in my 14 years through the back door.
Because they wouldn't let you in the front door.
That's
right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I go through the back door. I go right through to get to people's taste buds.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that great taste and great nutrition don't sit at opposite sides of the plate, that they have to be joined together. And so I engage healthcare practitioners in actual experiential things that have to do with food directly.
And what are you doing at Stanford Hospital?
So right now, I'm working on a very interesting program where I'm helping practitioners understand the role of taste and flavor as it applies to cancer patients who are going through chemotherapy and radiation, and often
where you lose your appetite.
Yes,
and you don't want to eat anything.
Right,
I've gone through that.
Yes, so you don't want to eat anything, and your taste buds are like a electric board, and it's like somebody just dumped water on, you know,
and it's
like, you know, how are the taste buds working? Well,
not at all.
So I do things, experiential things, where I might, for example, in a couple workshops that I've done where I'll give them a raisin and I'll make them eat it mindfully, and they'll describe how the raisin tastes. The raisin is very sweet. It's lovely. It's this. I've never tasted such a sweet raisin before. And then I'll give them I'll make them take a bite out of a little spice, and they'll chew the spice, the herb, and then I'll have them eat the raisin again, and all of a sudden the raisin does not taste like the raisin that they experienced.
It has no flavor.
Has no flavor.
It's completely different.
It's totally different. And the look on their faces, it's like, their jaw drops, their eyes pop out of their heads. They're like, wait a minute, but this doesn't taste blah. And I'm like, welcome to your patient's mouth, because this is what your patients are experiencing. And how do we correct it? So I'm sort of what I call a culinary translator. I translate again. What is it that's going on? What is that science? How do we relate it to the plate? How do we get people to taste when they can't? Or how do we coax people to eat in a healthful way to boost their immune system and their health, instead of just giving them a bunch of things that they don't understand?
As I have mentioned to you, and by the way, for those of you who may have tuned in just a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Rebecca Katz, a very knowledgeable person in nutrition. She has a master's in nutrition. She just told you about her relationship at the Georgetown Medical School and also Stanford Hospital. I have invited her because I happened to hear her interviewed on a local station in San Francisco with respect to her new book, The Longevity Kitchen, which I am incredibly impressed with. It is a magnificent book, both in information, and if you look at the photos, I mean, they are absolutely incredible of the foods that she has put together. I want to give you her website so that you can see something about her if you'd like to. It's www.rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, Katz, K-A-T-Z.com. All one word, of course, www.rebeccakatz.com. And I have felt that it would be very, very important for my audience to hear what you have to say, because I think, as I've mentioned to you before, I think it's very important that health issues are made, education in health is made available to people, because it's my belief that it's certainly just as important as most legal issues, and maybe more important. So that's why Rebecca Katz is here to start the year with us. One of the things, if you don't mind, Rebecca, that and by the way, everyone, this, if I were to do justice to Rebecca Katz and her book, we would need at least 2 hours. We don't have it, I'm sorry to say. But I want you to listen very carefully to what she has to say. But one of the things that you might be aware of, in the February edition of Consumer Reports, and I'm a great believer in Consumers Union and also the magazine Consumer Reports, on page 33 is an article starting with the title, Confusing Chicken Labels Decoded. You know, you go into the supermarket and you go down the freezer line, and most of the frozen foods that are not, let's say, red meat are chicken.
Yeah.
And I'm very concerned. I happen to be a vegetarian. I do not eat chicken, but I'm very concerned about health and chicken. Would you talk a little bit? I know in your book you talk about, if people are going to eat chicken, make sure that you get an organic chicken.
Right.
Talk briefly about that, would you? And then we'll get to some of the things that you'd like to talk about.
Well, I think it's very important when we're talking about eating animal protein that we really have to think about the quality of the protein that we're eating. And it's very confusing out there. And so there are things that are like natural, free range, that doesn't really mean that much. The scary thing about the way animals are raised right now, when we're talking about feedlot or, you know, factory farmed chicken, is that they're raised in inhumane conditions. They are shot up with antibiotics. They're fed things that that they don't digest well. So they're sick. Mm-hmm. And so this is not a healthy form of protein. So when you are eating chicken, I advise that you buy organic chicken, or if you're at your farmer's market and there's somebody that is raising pasture-raised chickens, that you look for pasture-raised chickens or pasture-raised eggs.
What does that mean by pasture-raised chickens?
It means that they are walking around and eating grass and insects and what Mother Nature intended them to eat.
If I may interrupt you, if you don't mind, for one moment. If you, those of you out there, look at Consumer Reports, the latest edition for February. On page 35, there is a photograph of broiler farm. Thousands of chickens are raised together on a farm in Texas. It is absolutely incredible to see how these chickens are at this farm. I cannot describe it. It's frankly disgusting.
Yeah.
I'm very unhappy to see how chickens are raised. But keep going, if you would.
Yes. So any time that, first of all, if you are eating, for example, grass-fed beef, the nutritional profile of grass-fed beef versus feedlot beef is, you know, night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Grass-fed beef has a high ratio of really healthy omega-3 fatty acids, which you would find in wild salmon and other forms of fish. And omega-3 fatty acids are anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, flip the coin. If you were to eat feedlot beef, that would be very high in omega-6 fatty acids, which, you know, we tend in this country to have a much higher ratio of inflammatory omega-6 to anti-inflammatory omega-3 fatty acids.
What does an omega-6 do to us?
Well, an omega-6 fatty acids, when we have too much omega-6 fatty acids, then we kind of put our bodies into an inflammatory state. And if we put ourselves in an inflammatory state, then we're more susceptible to heart disease and cancer and other chronic illnesses. So the idea is that we want to keep the balance more higher to the ratio to omega-3s to omega-6.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds very kind of like the easiest way to say it is you want to try and keep the fire low or not burning in your body at all.
Mm-hmm.
So inflammation is like your body systemically, you know, heated up. And the great thing about omega-3 fatty acids is it's the way to quell the fire. And omega-3 fatty acids are really good for our heart and our minds, and they're very important. So to keep a healthy balance.
Let me ask you this. There was a on NPR, I think it was yesterday, maybe it was the day before, there was a report about the importance of cinnamon, as we all know the spice cinnamon, that it is very significant. Now, I looked on the internet at my office yesterday to find the report. The report comes out that I could find going back to September of this last year, not something that occurred in the last few days. But what is the significance of cinnamon to us, generally speaking? I know there are some negative aspects of it, depending on what you're doing. But generally speaking, the positive aspects of cinnamon.
Oh, I can't think of many negative aspects about cinnamon.
Okay.
First of all, it's a very warming spice. We're all familiar with it if we've ever, you know, just smelled a pumpkin pie baking in the oven or whatever. But cinnamon is an anti-inflammatory spice. It has more antioxidants than any fruit or vegetable. Like a half a teaspoon of cinnamon is just unbelievably powerful in terms of its antioxidant
What does antioxidant do for us?
Yes. So an antioxidant, I just want you to imagine that you're, let's say, have you ever cut an apple open and you see after a while, after about 5 minutes, it starts to turn brown?
Yes,
of course.
Yeah.
That's oxidative stress. Okay. So if, on the other hand, you cut the apple and you squeeze some lemon on that apple, which is very high in antioxidants, that apple will not turn brown.
Mm.
So we think of ourselves, oxidative stress is kind of the rust we develop in our bodies as we age, right? So anything that is an antioxidant is the thing that is going to go into our body like a scrubbing bubble and mm-hmm. scrub away the rust and prevent oxidation.
That's
so very important that we eat as many antioxidants as we possibly can, especially as we as a part of a longevity based diet, because that's what happens. As you know, the more time we're here on the planet, mm-hmm. the more environmental factors we're exposed mm-hmm. to, the more, you know, different foods we're eating, any number of things, stress. So back to cinnamon, high antioxidant, also a blood sugar regulator. So in the study that you were referring to, they looked at people who were pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And they put a control group. They had them add about, I think it was equivalent to about a half a teaspoon of cinnamon mm-hmm. to their diets. Maybe it was a half a teaspoon or a teaspoon throughout the day. And on a daily basis, and they saw shifts in blood sugar. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very interesting because cinnamon is used in a lot of different cuisines, especially in Indian cuisine and really all over the world.
More so than in the United States.
Yeah.
Apparently.
I mean, we may sprinkle a little mm-hmm. bit, but, mm-hmm. you know, we don't use spices as a core part of our cooking as much as mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. Cultures do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's also has a lot of digestive support. It aids in pain relief because it is anti-inflammatory. So it's got a lot of wonderful things going for it. And here's what you can do. You can sprinkle cinnamon on your coffee. You can sprinkle it in your oatmeal. You can use it in combinations with other herbs like cumin, coriander, turmeric, which is another anti-inflammatory herb, in just the way that you make soups, or you can sprinkle it on any number of mm-hmm. of things.
Well, one of the things that I think is very important in terms of your being on the program with us, and when I say us, not only myself, but the audience listening to you, is that I feel there's only so, we're like touching just the tip of the iceberg here in terms of what you're trying to do to educate people about having a healthy life through food. And I certainly urge anyone who's serious about trying to have a healthy life that they want to take a look at your book, frankly. And I want to make it very clear to everyone, the publisher of this book has no connection with this program, no connection with this station. Rebecca Katz is a guest of mine because I think it's important that she is on this program to talk with us about what's important. I know there were some things you wanted to talk about, and we have just a few minutes left in the statewide version of the program. What other foods? You have in your book on page 2, you have 16 very important foods. What in the remaining maybe 5 minutes of the statewide program, and those who are listening to the program live will be able to call in and talk with you on the air, because we are live in the Bay Area for an hour. We're live on the internet at www.klw.org. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted people to understand that actually what we're talking about in terms of foods, they're foods that are very simple and readily available. So there are hundreds of foods, but the 16 that I wanted to highlight in this book are, again, super high in antioxidants. Again, they're the scrubbing bubbles that are going to go in and protect our bodies. And they are avocados and asparagus, basil and mint, blueberries and other dark berries, coffee. And that's like good dark coffee, not, you know, coffee that you have like 12 shots of, syrups added to and, whatever. Sorry.
Okay.
Dark chocolate, garlic, green tea, kale, which is a super uber cruciferous, and anything in the, like, broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, olive oil, big, wonderful longevity food, pomegranates, sweet potato, thyme, walnuts, wild salmon, yogurt, and then, of course, there's wonderful power spices like ginger and cinnamon and turmeric and, all of these
what
foods.
What is it about turmeric? Because I read something recently, and I was impressed that turmeric could be very helpful. What is it? T-U-M-E-R-I-C?
Yes. Turmeric has a compound in it called curcumin.
Spell it, would you?
Oh, my gosh. C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N.
Okay.
So curcumin. And turmeric is a anti-inflammatory and what it's called an NF-kappa beta inhibitor. It's a cancer-fighting spice and super, super good for us.
Really?
And
so
our
minds. It's a cancer-fighting spice.
Yes.
And that should be very important for people
to look into. As an herb. Mint is a cancer-fighting herb.
Ah.
Yes.
Ah. Okay. You got one more minute. Anything else you want to tell us in this remaining minute?
I want you to know that translating the food to the plate would be like if I said, Chuck, I really think that you should eat avocados.
Oh, I do. I love them.
Good.
I think I have them nearly every day.
That's wonderful because they're very high in an antioxidant called glutathione. But I'm not going to send you to the farmer's market looking for glutathione, but I will send you for avocados.
And I will go.
And you will go and you will eat them and they'll be yummy and you'll be doing yourself and your body great.
All right. It is, it looks like 728 at 91.7. KLW, your local public radio station in San Francisco. And we are doing a program on health on this segment of Your Legal Rights. I wanted to start the new year. And by the way, anyone who's joined us a little bit late, I wish you a happy new year. This is January 1st, 2014. I want to mention this to you. If you feel you would like me to do more health programming, and many years ago when I was in my early years as a public broadcaster, and I'm talking probably 29 years ago, I did a health program. I think I did it before even Dr. Dean Edel did. And it was called HealthWise, and the American Heart Association in San Francisco was so impressed with what I did, and I'm not trying to brag about this, that they actually gave me a $4,000 grant, which was amazing to me. In any event, I am thinking about doing a separate program on health, and if those of you feel that you would like to have this station and me do something like that, I'd like you to communicate with Matt Martin, the manager, or someone here at the station, and let them know if you feel you'd like to have something like that. In any event, let me give you the phone number in case you'd like to call in with your questions, your comments, your concerns in the area of health. The number is 1-415-841-4134. That's 1-415-841-4134. If you're listening to us live on the internet at www.kalw.org, that's the same number that you would call. My guest is Rebecca Katz. Her last name is spelled K-A-T-Z. She has a master's in nutrition. She is the executive chef of the annual Food as Medicine training program at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine at Georgetown Medical School. She's the author of two recent books. The one that we are focusing on this segment of Your Legal Rights is The Longevity Kitchen. The other one that predates this one is The Cancer Fighting Kitchen, Her website, in case you'd like to see more about her, is www.rebeccacatz.com, www.rebeccacatz.com. And so if you have any questions, comments, or whatever, I'd like you to join us with them, because this is, I think, a great way to start the year. And so let's find out. Martin is going to put somebody's name up there. Oh, Ruth Ann, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hi, you're on the air, my dear.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Ruth Ann. Can we have Ruth Ann, can you hear us? Hello? What happened? What happened to Ruth Ann? Okay, come on now. I don't want the gremlins running tonight. Let's get people on the air. Sorry, Ruth Ann, if we cut you off somehow, and I don't know how, try again, 1-415-841-4134. Sorry for whatever happened there. So we'll find out who's next on the air. By the way, I want to let you know, next week we're going to do a program on family law, and the focus will be on multi-parent families for children in the dependency system. My guests will be Andrew Kane, chair of the family law section of the State Bar of California, and Deborah Wald, a member of the executive committee of the family law section. That's for next week. And I'm hoping that we can... Oh, we got a lot of people who want to talk to you. And my thought on this is, since this is so terribly important, you know, as I stress to you from time to time, I want you to... when I say you, I'm talking about you listening to the program. I want you to be aggressive. When we're talking about the law, I want you to be aggressive in terms of educating yourself. I want you to be aggressive about health issues. I mean, that's how we get along in this world. We've got to be aggressive and not just sit back on our hands. Carla, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, thanks for staying with us, Carla.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. I just want to wish you both a Happy New Year.
Well,
and
thank you.
Ms. Cass, I went online and looked at your website, and I am, like, drooling. I've already had dinner, but it's like I want.
Well, you can have a second dinner, Carla.
No, it's like, you know, it's wonderful to hear this program, and I'm definitely for you, Mr. Finney, to pursue the healthy living.
Well, certainly program. let the station manager know that, if you would send him an email or whatever is convenient for you, because I'm serious about this. I'm going to have the time to do it, and I don't know that the station would have the time to have another program with me hosting it. But in any event, go ahead, Carla.
Well, actually, I have a question for postmenopausal women. Your metabolism changes a little bit.
Yes.
And I was wondering, are there any, because I eat really well, and I'm kind of pescatarian, I call it, you know.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means that I'll eat fish, but I eat mostly vegetables.
Oh, do you?
I eat pretty much low on the food chain.
Okay.
And I grew up with a Mediterranean diet, and parents grew a garden every year, and I know how to put up food. And
wow.
But the thing is that, are there any specific foods or herbs or spices that can help jumpstart your metabolism?
Yes. As a matter of fact, peppers. So cayenne.
Mm-hmm. Peppers.
Peppers.
Oh, boy.
So cayenne, chili.
You'll be jumping, Carla.
chili pepper flakes, red chili pepper flakes.
Yes.
Which is used extensively in kind of the Mediterranean cuisine.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Hot peppers actually can rev up your metabolism.
But you don't have to go overboard with
No.
them. Right.
No, but good to incorporate them just, mm-hmm. you know, not only for taste and flavor, but just to rev up your metabolism.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is wonderful to hear.
And Carla, I want you to report back on your use of hot peppers.
Well, I do have a pasta recipe that uses broccoli, olive oil, and hot red pepper flakes with, I'm sorry to say, Mr. Finney, anchovies.
Well,
that's great.
Listen, why are you sorry to say that?
Well, you don't eat anchovies, do you?
I eat fish.
Oh, you do?
Okay. I don't eat chicken or meat, but I eat fish, yeah.
I'll send along the recipe.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. That's very nice, Carla.
Sounds
thank
yummy.
You.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Happy New Year to you.
You too. Thank you.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey,
hello.
Welcome.
Hi. Yes. I've got so many questions. Is kelp radioactive? Can you eat bread? This guy in UCSF is talking about the fact that they grind the flour into bread into powder, and so you don't have the fibers. Is that real?
Wait a minute, Ed, stop for a moment. You just can't ask all these questions. Who's the guy at UCSF who's saying this?
I can't remember the guy's name, but he's come out on a couple public radio stations and talked about what happens in North America is we grind the flour into a powder, and so it doesn't have a long filament, and the filament attaches to your intestine and wicks the nutrients into your intestine. And he says he wrote the book Fat Chance.
Okay, that's Dr. Lustig, Robert Lustig.
Yes.
Who was on my program a few months ago. But let me stop you, Andy.
Okay, is his theory, can we eat kelp? Is it radioactive? Can we eat fish? Is it radioactive?
Okay, all right, hold on. Ed, we can't take all the questions. Let me get Rebecca to respond to a couple of your questions. You're very enthusiastic, and it's wonderful, but I got a whole bunch of people who want to talk. So turn your radio back up, if you would, and I'll get Rebecca to respond to a couple of the things you brought up, okay?
Good deal.
Thank you very much for calling.
So,
we need at least an hour just for Ed.
these are big questions. Yes, there's more and more of an awareness of the role of gluten in our diets and the way our wheat is grown and processed in this country in ways that it wasn't 40 or 60 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, yes, what Dr. Lustwick is talking about is a real problem. So that's one. As far as kelp goes fish, there's a lot of specific testing that's going on. And again, just as you would think about where your chicken and your beef is coming from, you definitely want to look at where your fish is coming from, because now people are really starting to test.
When you say coming from, it's the fish that's being farmed.
Yes.
That you're concerned about.
Well, yes, but I think Ed's concern is there's a lot of talk about is there radioactivity, passing its way into our coastline from Japan? And now fishermen are independently testing their fish.
Are they?
And
is that required by the government, or are they just doing it themselves?
They're doing it themselves, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
That's good.
So now people are being very careful about it. So is it something to worry about? Not right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would scratch that off your list. But if you want to eat whole grains, eat the whole grain.
Yeah. And no white bread.
No white bread. Yeah.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. That's 650-369-4149. Now, I want to tell you something. Both the Lawyer Referral Service of the San Francisco Bar and the San Mateo County Bar are funders of this program. They are not. None of the funders of Your Legal Rights are paying at all for this program. I'm paying for it because I believe in it. So I want you to know that although this is a legal program, none of the funders of my program are paying for this. I do, because I believe that this is important enough to do it. That's the same, by the way, and you'll find this remarkable, when I do a landlord-tenant program. I pay for it. Okay, who we got up now? We've got Ariana. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
So my question is...
Ariana, dear, turn down your radio.
Got it.
got it.
You're echoing. It sounds wonderful, but go ahead.
My question is about the relationship between what you eat and type 2 diabetes, because I understand that you can acquire type 2 of diabetes if you're maybe obese or depending on what you eat. Someone in my family has eats a lot of bacon and a lot of meat and is obese, and I'm wondering if there's a connection with animal fat. And, well, I'm pretty sure there is with obesity. So that generally is my question.
Okay, if you turn your radio up, Ariana, thank you very much for calling.
Thanks, Ariana. Is there a correlation between what we eat and the type of chronic illnesses that we might acquire, like diabetes? Yes, of course there is, especially if there's a predisposition. Certainly, obesity plays a huge role. And it's probably not just the bacon and the meat that's contributing to the diabetes, but probably the amount of refined carbohydrates that might be consumed along with the bacon and the beef.
Like what? What would be the carbohydrates we'd be talking about?
So white flour, white sugar, processed foods, you know, all of that can lead to insulin resistance and diabetes.
I think Ariana, I think she said this was her relative, right?
Yes.
I think you need to help your relative really start to look very carefully at the diet that he or she has. I can't remember whether the man or a woman, but obviously this is something that, and you talk about this in your book, that one can help oneself.
Absolutely.
Even with type 2 diabetes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just a shift in diet and exercise can make a huge difference in how the disease manifests itself.
So good luck, Ariana. By the way, Anne, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I was just finishing a sweet potato chip with chia seeds. I was going to ask, oh, by the way, thank you. I'll look forward to your health program, Mr. Finney, Chuck Finney.
You can call me Chuck.
Okay, Chuck. And I wondered if what would Rebecca say about foods that help relax you at night? I know there's certain teas, lavender and chamomile, and if somebody has trouble waking up at 2, 3 in the morning, trouble getting back to sleep, are there certain foods that rev you up? I love the peppers and the thermogenic spices, but if somebody wants to calm and relax.
And be able to sleep through the night, you want to know?
Or just be calmer, just I'm a little nervous right now, just be more calm. And I know for me, omega fats help. I can tell they lift my spirits. And I'm trying to move away from eating any animal myself or even fish. You know, if I see fish in an aquarium, they come right up to the glass and they look at me and
they say, "Don't eat me." They say, "Don't eat me."
Yeah, I love animals. Yeah. Why am I eating?
Let me get Rebecca to respond to some of what you've been talking about.
Yes. So the things that calm us are foods that have magnesium in them. So there's a recipe on my website. It's called the Magic Mineral Broth, and it's very calming because it happens to be it's has a lot of mineral content, but it also contains sweet potatoes, and so it's a very soothing elixir. You can drink it all day. You can use it as the base of soups. You know, you can sip it at night. Things that definitely that have chamomile in them and lavender, certainly almonds. So there's also a recipe on my site for an almond, gluten-free blueberry almond muffin that would be kind of a nice thing to have with your cup of tea. Again, almonds have the right amount of fat, the right amount of protein and carbohydrate, but a lot of magnesium. So you want to look at foods that are high in magnesium for calming.
So Much calm to you, Anne, and a happy new year. Thanks for calling. All right, we've got Ruth Ann came back. Ruth Ann, dear, nice to hear.
Oh, hi there. I got cut off before. I wanted to ask if there were any foods that helped with osteoarthritis.
Mm.
Ah, yes. Again, foods that are really high in omega-3 fatty acids. So that cold water fish, not farmed fish, but cold water fish.
Salmon, for example.
Salmon, anchovies.
Wild salmon.
But wild salmon,
wild
not
salmon.
Farmed salmon.
Right.
Anchovies, black cod, anything that's got avocados, olive oil, anything that you would think would be like almost like an internal lubricant is really...
oh, well, I love avocados.
Well, there you go. So those are the types of foods that you want to be drawn to, things that have good, healthy fats in them.
But also focus on the omega-3s.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Ruth Ann.
Thank you very much.
Happy New Year to
Happy
you.
Happy New Year.
Thanks for calling. Take care. All right. We have a few minutes left, actually. Enough for several more of you to call in if you like. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Rebecca Katz. We are starting the new year on January 1st, 2014. It's hard to believe. Here we are again. My guest is Rebecca Katz, who has a master's in nutrition. She's written a couple of very significant books. She has a relationship with Georgetown Medical School, with also Stanford Hospital. Her books are, and the one that we focused on this segment of Your Legal Rights is The Longevity Kitchen. Her previous book is The Cancer Fighting Kitchen. Her website is www.rebeccakatz.com. So, all right, let's see who we've got here. Elizabeth, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question about thyroid deficiency and eating things like kale. I've heard that it's not good to eat kale, too much kale when you have a low thyroid, and I'm wondering, does that extend to any wider kind of family of vegetables, and can you eat any at all, or should you just stay away from it altogether, or is it even true?
Ah, Elizabeth, this is a really good question. Basically, the cruciferous family has been implicated in inhibiting thyroid function, and I would say that this is what I call a little bit of information can be a dangerous thing.
Yeah, let's be careful.
So you can eat the cruciferous, all the vegetables, including kale and the cruciferous family, even if your thyroid is running on the low side. It's if you eat it too much, and it would be like you would have to eat, you know, two to three bunches of kale in one sitting.
Wow.
So if you're talking about a half a cup of kale or a half a cup of cabbage or some Brussels sprouts or, you know, a half a cup of, which is a half a cup is a serving of broccoli, you're fine. And I will tell you that the phytonutrients, which is the plant nutrients that you are getting, and the antioxidant properties and all the things that those cruciferous vegetables are giving you, it far outweighs anything that might impair thyroid function. So go ahead.
Great. Great. And if the kale has been sitting in the fridge and it's starting to get a little yellow, does it still have all its nutrition in it?
Well, it probably, you probably can get away with about a week. But if it starts yellowing a little, it's starting to lose some of its juice.
Okay, great.
Get some fresh kale, Elizabeth.
I just planted a whole bunch. So.
Oh, good.
Good for you. Okay, well, take care. Happy New Year. Glad you called. All right. Ed, we're back to you, but you've got one question to ask, because I want to give other people a chance to call in. Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you for indulging me on this.
Sure.
I just wanted to return to the bread issue.
Okay, Dr. Lustig. Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Lustig. As I understand it, and I'm not saying this, I was surprised, and I want to know what your take on it is. As I understand it, he says any bread made in North America is, whether no matter how organic, no matter how whole grain it is, that people is ground too fine to be helpful for your digestive system. That's what I think. That's what I'm pretty sure he's saying.
I don't remember. You know, Ed, when he was on the program, because I had him come on, and the focus was we all eat too much sugar. I don't remember him saying that, and I'm not sure that that is his position. I can't speak to it, but let me get Rebecca to respond to it.
I heard him speak twice, and the first time he emphasized it, and the second time he didn't emphasize it.
I see.
It,
okay.
I'm curious.
All right. Well, let's see what Rebecca might say. Turn your radio back up. Thank you for coming back again with this point. I think it's interesting to see what response you might have.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of validity to this point of bread, especially ground very finely, mm-hmm. inhibiting the people's digestion, especially if they have trouble with gluten.
Yeah.
And there are more and more people that have gluten sensitivities, not full-blown celiac, but certainly gluten sensitivities. I also think that if you have insulin issues or you're trying to regulate your blood sugar, that bread is not going to be the star of your diet. You know, it's not going to be your top food.
Yeah.
So I would agree. I think that sometimes when you look at not what you can't have, but if you take away, like you take bread away from your diet for a while and see how you feel, right? And it gives you this opportunity to introduce other foods that you mm-hmm. might not have been eating because you've been taking up, you know, space with bread. So I definitely think there's a lot of validity to it. And I would look at other sources of more nutrient-dense foods, like vegetables.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, very good. Very good. All right. Aaron, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for the show. This is great.
Well, good.
In regards to the metabolism and the spices, I have a fast metabolism, and I also have trouble sleeping.
Mm.
And so the question is there something that would slow it down? For example, I drink grapefruit juice, and I've noticed that helps in combination with other supplements. And for example, I was also curious about valerian. Someone had told me about that. Just making a glass of tea was very effective. So,
all right.
And also about the gluten, about that, I had heard initially that gluten makes you sleepy. That's part of the reason people get sleepy when they eat a sandwich or something. I said, great, you know, that'll calm me down. But then I've heard these other, if it's inflammatory, then, you know, that won't work anymore.
Let me get Rebecca to respond. Aaron, if you'll turn your radio back up so you can listen to her response. If you would, Rebecca, as you respond to Aaron, gluten is what? For all of us who, let's say, are not on the level of your knowledge, what is gluten?
So gluten is the protein that makes bread kind of have the loft and the spongy quality to it that we have come to know. And we tend to produce wheat that has, I would say, probably 80% more gluten than our ancestors ever ate, and certainly in certain parts of Europe. So let's say in Germany or in Russia, when they had a whole grain bread, you could see the grains in it. Okay. Mm-hmm, and I think this is what, you know, this
So it's the fine grain or the grinding of the grain that equals the gluten. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, that wheat.
It's, yes.
Wheat, rye, barley.
Okay, all right. It's those grains.
It's those grains.
And non-gluten is none of those grains.
Right. So there's the list is long. You can look it up on the web to see exactly which grains have gluten in them. But anyway, that is the protein in the grain that some people have difficulty with.
And so in responding to Aaron, what further comments do you have for him?
Well, I would say that just in terms of calming, there are some complex carbohydrates that, I mean, I would look at sweet potatoes. I would look at things that are high in magnesium, potassium, and again, more of a whole foods-based diet.
What does that mean, a whole food?
Whole foods, meaning whole foods in their natural states and not processed foods.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck to you, Aaron. All right, last call, I think, and we have maybe half a minute. Andre, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Chuck, and thank you for your show. My question is in regard to dental, the situation in my mouth. My dentist says that my system is so acidic that my teeth are becoming decayed too quickly.
Wow.
Are there any nutritional things that I can address?
Wow.
Well, it sounds like, do you have what seems to feel like acid reflux or
yes,
heartburn?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, and that does manifest itself in the mouth, actually. So things that I probably would avoid are things like coffee and chocolate would not be your friends. Alcohol.
No alcohol.
That would probably, also there, you might want to think about, you know, are there certain foods that you eat that, you know, afterwards you just, you know, your stomach feels upset.
I'll tell you, citric acid really bothers me.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So those are the types of foods that you probably want to stay away from.
Yes, but citric acid is often in, like, canned foods, and sometimes you just don't even know it's there.
Right. Again, I think that, you know, that we make a point about looking at cooking with whole foods, you know, and staying away from processed foods. So, you know, again, looking at a lot of good fruits and vegetables in your diet.
We have come to the end of the program. Andre, welcome. And well, thank you for calling and Happy New Year to you. I want to thank you very much, Rebecca, for joining us. It's been wonderful to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
I'll certainly have you back. Rebecca Katz has a master's in nutrition. Her most recent book is The Longevity Kitchen. Her previous book is The Cancer Fighting Kitchen. Her website is www.rebeccakatz.com. Your Legal Rights production staff persons are Eric Wayne. Eric, nice to have you here. He's our program engineer. Production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, family law will focus on multi-parent families for children in the dependency system. My guests will be Andrew Kane, chair of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, Deborah Wald, a member of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section. Happy New Year to all of you. Thanks for listening to the program. I'm Chuck Finney.